The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to Partners in the Gospel. I'm Mark Skullberg, your host, and we're so glad you've joined us each Thursday here at 4:30 at 100.7. And you know, on Partners in the Gospel, we partner with organizations, ministries, businesses that are making a difference not only nationally, worldwide, and certainly right in our backyard in Colorado. And today we're kind of focus in on the state of Colorado, and more specifically, the Colorado Department of Corrections. And I'm with Colorado Department of Corrections Executive Director Dean Williams. So, Dean, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me back.
It's been a while. It's been over a year pre-COVID.
Right.
But let's just start right out of the gate about COVID. So here we are now, 14 months later for the most part, and everything has been turned upside down, from families to loss, obviously, grief, schools, businesses, plans, and that includes certainly the Department of Corrections. And it's been hard for everyone, but tell our listeners, you know, how has COVID restrictions, protocols impacted the DOC's offenders and employees? But we want to start with offenders. And I know it's been rough for everybody for all the above reasons, but let's start with offenders. How has COVID impacted them, and what, and all the stuff you've been doing to mitigate?
Well, you're right. I mean, this has been a difficult season for the state, the country, the world, really,
absolutely,
this pandemic. So, and it is especially difficult for people who are incarcerated, because we've restricted, eliminated visitation. We've cut back outside programs like faith communities coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, as we were all sitting at home during the pandemic, or many of us were, and many people had still had to go to work, but the restrictions around everything, you can just imagine what that's like behind the walls for the inmate population. And so it's been difficult. The good news is that as we get towards the end of it, we have, you know, even in those restrictions, we still allowed certain pods to visit together. But the reality is that things were very more restrictive, and that's hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for men and women behind the walls who are trying to find a life for themselves there when you have a pandemic. Prisons weren't built to weather a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been the challenge the last 14 months as our department's worked through, quite frankly, focusing on saving lives, because that really had to be the top priority. How
right.
do we mitigate loss of life?
Yeah, and I believe I recall correctly, as a chaplain at Fremont Correctional Facility, I think there was 29 deaths or something like that.
Correct.
And then you've done, you just mentioned some of those mitigation efforts, you know, to separation of living units, no faith community stuff, no volunteers. And I think the big piece for offenders is no family visits.
Right.
And so, I mean, there's been video visits and stuff like
right.
that, but you also been doing regular testing. I'm tested twice a week, you know, outside, and then on rapid tests on the inside. You've been vaccinating. But let's talk a little bit about on the reality check of the people on the inside. So they've been separated from each other in living units, men and women.
Right.
They've been separated or restricted for a recreation, certainly the family visitation, but their education opportunities, classes, courses, jobs, religious services. And the mitigation efforts, though, from what I see as a chaplain on the dashboard, is paid off.
Well,
right?
The difficult part of this is, the good news is that you're right. We lost 29 men behind the walls as a result of the virus. That's 29 too many. I talked to those
sure.
family members. It's
sure.
it's horrible.
Yeah.
The good news is that, and, you know, I'm not extremely if I want to call it a silver lining, because I'm not sure if it's really a silver lining, but
right.
the reality is that we have mitigated the loss of life, which has been the mission. So the mortality rate of how many inmates got the virus is lower than the public average of the mortality rate of this virus.
That's true.
That's a good thing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The second thing is I've been really worried about what's happening to men and women who we may miss, who may like decompensate inside his cell and not get it to a hospital bed and not get the best chance, the fighting chance of survival, right? And we've done well on that, and the public doesn't see that.
Yeah, but no, they don't.
It's what keeps me up at night is that I don't want anyone passing who doesn't have the best shot at survival, or do they need to be in a hospital bed? And so, I mean, we had ambulances standing by outside of prisons at the height of at the outbreaks, right? Mm-hmm. Like we had medical teams ready to rush people to the hospital.
I remember.
And we were monitoring oxygen levels of people who are sick inside to make sure. And the other thing is we learned from other states who had much rougher runs of it. I mean, I have friends with other directors around the country, Ohio, Michigan, mm-hmm. for example. They had a horrible one. In Ohio, they got into one of their infirmaries. They had a high loss of life in these infirmary units. So, I mean, we're not completely out of the woods yet, but we're in so much better place than we were back in those days. And we weathered that. And so all those other things were so hard. And mm-hmm. I talked to family members, too, about this stuff. But
right.
We have saved lives. I know we've saved lives through those means and not. And we tested the heck out of staff and inmates.
Yes.
Like way before anyone was recommending testing the heck out of everybody, we did because it. You know, I was learning from my colleagues around what it means to be in a prison environment. So
mm-hmm.
I give us high marks, you can't get too high marks when you still know that we're still able to deal with the reality of losing 29 men, and that's a real thing.
But also, it's impacted the employees.
Correct.
Because they tell us, our listeners, you know, what does that look like for the employees during COVID?
Well, I mean, think about this, is that one of the last places that you want to be at to go to work is in a congregate environment where the virus is robustly moving through a prison where you don't have air filtration, et cetera. So we were asking our staff to go into a positively infected prison where there are several hundred prisoners who were infected, who were positive, and to watch them and to help care for them, wearing a mask and all the precautions and cleaning and everything else. But this was a very contagious virus, right? And so we were asking our staff to go work in that environment. I could imagine how they're, and oh, by the way, they go back home, they get infected, they don't even know they are, even in spite of our testing, they pass it to their family members. So, I mean, there's a part of me that couldn't be more proud in terms of how our staff responded to the crisis, because they came to work and they showed up to work.
Yeah.
And there was at times when we had a lot of staff out who were sick. There was a one time during the height of this that we had over 500 staff who were out either being exposed or who were in fact positive, who couldn't come to work. And so that meant the other staff had to work really long shifts. And so it's been a painful journey.
Yeah,
real painful journey.
Maybe it would, Dean. Maybe it would help the listeners to know how many employees the DOC has in Colorado.
Well, yeah. So we have a little over 6,000, and there's some vacancies. About 400 or 500 of those were vacancies. So let's say we have approximately, and some of those are parole.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say we have 4,000, 4,500 working in a staff. Okay. If you lose 500 staff, out of that ratio. And some of the staff that work in prisons, we kept away from prisons anyhow, just to limit their chance of getting it themselves or bringing it into the prison. So we were on the correctional staff who were working in the prisons every day during the height of the outbreak are heroes.
Yeah, and long hours.
And long hours.
Yeah.
And really long hours. And so that part, I couldn't be more proud of our staff in terms of what they weathered through.
Do you think? Do you have a pulse on the morale of both the offender and the employee?
Yeah, no, I think it's been rough.
Yeah.
I mean, to be quite frank, it's been rough. I think the morale amongst the inmate population, men and women behind the walls. I think we bought goodwill before the pandemic hit because they knew that I was a director and my team and our staff. We were moving in a direction of trying to make prisons more humane and purposeful. Well, COVID threw us a massive curve for a year.
Absolutely.
And but I think we've had goodwill with the men and women in our custody. I think also, too, certainly I think morale was hit, but we did some things, and I did a lot of communication. We all did a lot of communication with our staff.
Mm-hmm.
We were honest about the risk. I pushed very hard for them to get a little bit of more monetary compensation, not a lot.
Okay.
When there was an outbreak at a prison, so they got a little bit more money.
Okay.
Like, not a lot of money, but $50 a day to help pay for the horrible the risk factor, quite frankly, of working in a prison.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that helped. Is it hard on families and for them to send off their husband or wife to go work in a prison and they're coming home?
Yeah,
it was. I think I'll just say in comparison to other states, and you know, I don't compare myself to other states because I think you have to stand on your own legs, right? But,
sure.
But I think we've done well overall.
I think so.
Because it's been a rolling, kind of a rolling crisis. Sometimes a crisis happens, you know, and you're like, wow, we've recovered from that.
Yeah.
This was one that was that was a continual, persistent worry and risk through the last 14 months.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that our conversation is doing some good to the listeners because they just don't know unless they happen to see those little pieces that the Polis says or some media clip in the Gazette or the Post in Denver. I mean, other than that, the majority of the people don't know, you know, what's happening on the inside. But recently, as we know, when the governor dropped restrictions or requirements for masks, and the CDC has done this. As I mentioned offline before we went on the air, you know, I'm getting mass emails, everything from Costco to United Airlines saying, hey, come on in, you know, everything's good. And I've gone to a couple of supermarkets in the last week or so, and the signs are out, but people aren't wearing masks. So it's changing, right? So what does that look like now moving forward for some of those restrictions and protocols being removed so that you can get to whatever normal is as far as family visitation? What does it look like right now?
Well, in prisons, still the CDC guidelines, and even if there wasn't the CDC guidelines, we're taking a little bit more measured response. So actually just yesterday, we just issued new mask
I saw that
protocol
email.
That loosens some of the testing and the mask requirements for staff who have been vaccinated.
Right.
Because quite frankly, we know that if you're vaccinated, you're less risk to being hurt yourself, right, by the virus.
Or give it to someone else.
Or giving it to somebody else.
Yeah.
You're in a much better spot.
Right.
So while it's still a position of that I've done everything to include, you know, to encourage our staff to continue to take the vaccine, we're making a distinction between vaccinated and unvaccinated staff.
Sure.
And for the only purpose, though, is based upon risk.
Yeah.
We know that vaccinated people represent less risk to everyone else around them, not just themselves.
Right.
So we're going to continue moving that rate, and we're issuing guidelines. Actually, we're starting up visitation. We're going to issue guidelines, I think, even this week or in terms of what we're doing.
For all the facilities?
For all the facilities, and then how we're going to stage them. So there's going to be, like, how many inmates are vaccinated, and do we have an outbreak at that prison? We're going to ask people to still wear masks coming in. We're going to ask them to, you know, still do some things to – because what we don't want – is to go backwards in terms of an outbreak.
So no, absolutely.
We're going to be a little bit behind in terms of what's happening publicly because a prison is a congregate environment, like really kind of not too many other locations, maybe a hospital or something.
Right.
But you have very density, you have a high density of staff and, I mean, of people in our custody, inmates, as well as staff. And so we're going to move a little bit slower, but the good news for your listeners, or if you have a loved one behind the walls, is that visitation is starting again in a reduced capacity.
Okay.
And we'll be issuing guidelines on that, like I said, either this week or very soon. I know that's already been drafted.
Okay.
And we issued guidelines, as I said, we just issued guidelines yesterday for our own staff around masking.
I did see that
testing,
email.
And testing. Yeah.
Now, as far as visitation, like our listeners, thinking, oh, I can't wait to see my son or my daughter.
Right.
What is that going to look like? I'm going to guess that I think you were saying a reduced capacity for visitation.
So in some places, we're starting at 25% of what we allowed before, for example. And it's really going to be influenced by what the uptake of the vaccine has been at
that facility.
So the really good news is, like, for example, at Buena Vista, is that 85% of the inmate population took the vaccine. It's huge.
Yeah,
I've asked my director of prisons and the wardens to say there can be some distinction based upon. In fact, I was out there a week or two ago.
At
Buena Vista, I was out there celebrating with the inmates and shaking hands with them.
Shaking hands, sure.
Yeah. But because they were vaccinated, the people that we were there, they were all vaccinated. They were two shots and 2 weeks in.
Right.
And so I know that this has been a horrible burden on families to not be able to see in person their loved one. And I get I'm getting emails about it almost daily as
I'm
well.
Sure you, I'm sure
to say
are.
Keep hope alive here.
Yeah, yeah.
Visitation is starting back up again.
Yeah.
As we've just finished up these round to make sure that we're 2 weeks in.
Yeah.
And to make sure that we're moving in a way that I don't inadvertently have an outbreak occur,
yeah.
and then we lose.
No,
ground.
You don't want to do that. But as you say that, does that mean it's going to be every facility, or each facility makes its own call as far as capacity?
No, we'll have guidelines for the entire department, but we're making some distinction on how fast we can move with facilities where there's a large uptake of the vaccine in a prison population.
So if you when you talk about fully vaccinated people 2 weeks beyond the last shot for offenders, obviously each facility knows who they are. So would that enable them to have, as a chaplain, religious services then, like we used to have? I mean, I will say as a chaplain, at least at Fremont, and, you know, there used to be 1,700 people in there. You know, now there's not.
Right.
But still, those guys are really hungry just to connect.
No, exactly. Yeah. And so that will open up other volunteer services too, and faith services. Again, we're going to probably start with reduced capacity. But all of that is because, quite frankly, the science says when in densely congregated environments, and this is the reason why the CDC guidelines are saying,
sure.
even around mask wearing, is that to move a little bit slower than you would in the community or the public, because we have gone through such a hard. What I don't want, quite frankly, is another. I'm not going to get us to the point like there'll always be a risk of anything occurring.
It's true.
Walking down the street,
driving your car.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm not at the place where I'm like, we're not going to accept a certain amount. I want to accept a calculated amount of risk and a more strategic and slower startup of that. Make sure that I don't have any other loss of life. We've lost 29 men, and I just don't want to lose one more.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I appreciate the compassion for sure. You know, what I wonder, too, for the volunteers that are coming in, I mean, I have a lot of volunteers that come in with me, you know.
Right.
And obviously, there's 4,000 volunteers in the state and Faith and Citizens. But for those people that do come back, I'm just going to guess, would that be a requirement to be vaccinated to come in?
Well, we've asked, it'll make it a lot easier if you are.
Yes, sir.
We're not totally requiring that people come back in or vaccinated, but we'll also, though, asking for different testing things then. So either you provide evidence of a PCR test of 72 hours, or you agree to Binax testing, which is rapid testing on site.
Okay.
Because we do catch people with that rapid testing who have not been vaccinated.
No, it's true.
Yeah. And so we may ask you to do some of those things. That's part of our guidance.
Sure.
If you're vaccinated, then that also sort of qualifies you as a sort of a more trusted volunteer. And so I would encourage those of you who want to come back into prison, if we know you're vaccinated and you claim that you are, it will make it easier for us. But we're still going to make accommodations for people who are not, but we're going to be careful around that because there's still a certain amount of people inside who maybe can't get the vaccine for other reasons.
Right.
We still have a duty to try to protect from another outbreak occurring.
What I'm wondering, Dean, it would make sense. We talk about rapid test. If, let's say, John Doe, Sally volunteers come in, let's say next Monday night at Fremont or Territorial, and they come in, they could have, or the visitation, they could have a rapid test
right
there.
Right.
Right. And so
leaving that option available for people that are coming in too.
Okay.
For visitation.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is that if you're already vaccinated, the chance the rapid test, we're not really catching
rapid
test because the good news is the vaccine works.
Yeah, it does.
Right. And,
yeah.
and even if we have breakthrough cases, all the science on that says that, hey, you're still going to be probably just fine yourself. And you're probably unlikely going to spread it, though. There's a small chance, but it's unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason why.
That's good.
We really encourage if you're going to come back in and you become part of the first people back in, you'd be doing us a solid and the people you're serving a solid if you, in fact, were vaccinated.
Yeah, yeah. That's the spin everywhere, obviously.
Yeah.
And it's proven to be true.
Right.
I mean, we've seen the numbers are dropping drastically everywhere. And so that's good. That's good to hear. I appreciate that. So as far as time, what does that look like, do you think? I mean, 2 weeks, month?
Well, I mean, the protocols are out now in terms of visitation. Mm-hmm. So I, my director of prisons, I've left him in charge of with in consultation with our medical department. But I know the protocols are out there, and I know that I think we're starting. I'm pretty safe to say this week. I'm looking at my PIO, but the reality is that we're starting to go that way at certain prisons. I'm sure this week. And so it may not reach your prison yet.
Okay.
So keep tuned.
Okay.
Yeah. To our webpage and our Facebook page, and as we announce
On the Facebook page?
Well, as soon as the policy comes out, as soon as our protocols come out, we'll put them on our web page. The department's webpage.
Okay. So, yeah. What is the Facebook page called?
But Colorado DOC, I think.
I'm looking at my PIO. I'm sorry.
It's Colorado DOC.
I'm not sure if
that's a trick question or not. No, I think it's Colorado DOC. And by the way, I hope some of your listeners really kind of follow that page. If you're a Facebook, some people aren't, but if you are,
right.
Because we talk about a lot of different things that are happening inside the department. And as we get back to normal, you're going to see some cool stuff that we're doing. I don't know if you heard or not, but just for one example, Denver University Prison Arts Initiative is that we're starting our own radio station.
What?
Yes, I don't want to be in competition with you. No, but it's all on the inside. We're going to run it on
a
the
limited
inside.
Limited signal, I get it. Yeah,
yeah, we're going to run it on the inside. It's all.
Where's the beta launch? Where's that going to be?
Well, it's all done. I don't know. There's some really smart people putting the radio station together with them that are figuring out how to do it on the inside. And if that goes well, then I said I would explore about how people can tap into. All done by the inmate population, so they're going to do their own editing.
Much like the local papers that are in each facility, right?
Correct. Yeah, yeah, okay. But you can even the local paper, the inside report. You can find it online. We're going to, again, COVID kind of threw a curve, but the goal is to have subscriptions to that local paper if you want to get a local paper. But all done by, you know, with some help from us. But really, the men and women behind the walls, when given something like this, they own it.
Yeah.
And it's cool.
No, that's true. Absolutely.
It's cool to see what they can do.
Yeah. You know, we only got about 3 minutes left, but in our last conversation, which is, pre-COVID for sure, we just talked about normalization, reform, all that. Maybe it'd just be helpful as before we get off the air. Tell our listeners, what is normalization? If you give a little snapshot, and then what does that look like as far as normalization moving forward?
Well, I mean, normalization is just simply this, is trying to make prisons on the inside look as much as possible as they are things on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason why this is really, really important, and I think I was trying to drive this point home the last time we talked, is that when there is life on the inside and there's purpose and there's intent, it's safer not only for the people who are living there, but it's safer for my staff. And the other thing is that you're doing less damage to the people who are when they're coming out.
Right.
And so there's nothing good. I think the last time I tell you what my line on this, my pitch on this is that – nothing good comes from making prisons a harsh and a punitive place. It's not better for us as a community. Yeah,
right.
It doesn't make our communities safer. It makes our communities less safe.
Right.
And so when prisons have a place of purpose and intentionality, it's better for the people who live and work there.
Absolutely.
And it's better for us and the community. It makes it safer for us and the community.
Yeah, and that lowers the recidivism rate and everybody's happy. You know, and people are coming back less than 50%. Everybody wins, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So gosh, Dean, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Mark, for having me
back. Really appreciate it. And if you, our listener, are interested, you can even actually personally call me here at the radio station at 719-531-5438. If you have questions about what we've talked about today, direct you some of those resources, or even if you want to volunteer potentially with a ministry that's been vetted that's already coming in or you were associated, and hopefully this has been helpful to you. So, Dean, thanks again for joining.
Thanks, Mark.
And we'd like to have Dean back, you know, sometime soon and talk about more about normalization.
Sure. Have me back in a few months once we're back open.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. I know the offenders and families are just looking forward to the day when we can get liberated.
Right. Exactly.
So anyway, I want to thank you, the listener, for joining us as always here on Partners in the Gospel. I want to ask you to stay with us with my good friend Gino Geraci right after this program. But join me next week with Alan Jackson, Pastor Alan Jackson from Tennessee. And we're going to talk about the state of the church and state of the nation as far as COVID adaptations and how you're doing ministry in the midst of it all and how ministry has changed. So I want to ask you to stay with us next week. But thank you for joining us today, as always, and we'll talk to you next Thursday right here, 4:30 for Partners of the Gospel, every Thursday at 4:30 on 100.7 The Word.